The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and Steve Turvett will be alongside me for the next hour. Our guest this week has climbed three divisions in the last 3 years and is now one of the top strikers in League One. Having grown up in Kent, he moved north to sign for Scunthorpe, but it was only when he returned to the Garden of England several years later that his career really took off. After two loan spells at Ebbsfleet, he joined the fleet permanently and caught the attention of Leeds scouts when his 30 goals helped the club reach the playoff final in 2016. It was Stevenage who gave him a chance in League Two, and he repaid their faith by scoring 35 goals in two seasons at the Lamex Stadium. Those numbers earned him another upward move, so it's a pleasure to welcome Peterborough United's Matt Godden to the podcast. Matt, thanks for coming in to see us.
Pleasure. Pleasure to be here.
Great to have you with us. Let's start with last season. Peterborough, 48 games, 18 goals, but fair to say a season of two halves, because you scored, what, about 13 in 20 early doors, but then it dried up a bit for you.
Yeah, it was, like you said there, like a real two halves to the season for me. I started, I think it was, when you work it out, I think it was 11 goals in 12 games or 13 games, something ridiculous like that right at the start of the season. So when you look at them numbers, without the goings-on that had happened, and I think I should have probably gone on and got 25-plus, if I'm honest with myself. But it wasn't to be, and that's football at the end of the day. So, but I'm pleased, really, with the 18. I would have liked to have got to 20 if I could. But, yeah, no, a real two-season for me, really, like the start of the season. And then I think I went on a dry patch for about almost 20 games of only scoring one or two goals, and that for me is really probably the first time that's happened in my career, because once I score one or two, Steve will know I go on and score in eight or nine games on the trot or get a good amount of goals. And obviously I was disappointed that didn't really happen.
I was going to say, in that case, then the fact you started so well in League One must have given you lots of confidence, and you went on one of those runs, you know, straight away for Peterborough.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I scored on the opening day of the season and scored in the very next game again, and I thought, cool, here we go. This is what I do. I've done this throughout my whole career. I go in big like spells of scoring goals, and like I just said, I did that, scoring 11 in 12 or whatever it was, and they were coming in doubles as well. I wasn't just getting one a game, I was getting a couple a game against some decent opposition as well, so that filled me with massive confidence going into the season. And that's when I really thought to myself, you know what, I can make this step up, and I can handle it.
You've moved obviously from conference level up to League Two with Stevenage, then to League One with Peterborough. At the start of the season, did you have those doubts? Can I make the step up? Or is it just a case of you've got the confidence from scoring goals at League Two? Once you're up and running in League One, you know you're good enough.
Yeah, well, I think as a striker, you're always confident, especially when you're scoring goals. And to make that step up from Ebbsfleet to Stevenage was one. That was probably the biggest one. Not so much Stevenage to Peterborough, but from Ebbsfleet to Stevenage, I was thinking, right, I've got my chance now back in the Football League. I need to take it. So I kind of put a lot of pressure on myself. And probably I didn't score, I don't think, for about 11, 12 games when I first went to Stevenage. So you get these doubts running in the back of your mind, thinking, is this step too far for me? But then, like we've just been saying, I went on one of those runs, especially after Christmas. I think I had probably six goals by Christmas, if that. And then went on a run, and people started coming out of all these stats about I'd scored more goals than Harry Kane in the calendar year and all that. For up in March, I think I had about 15 goals in 18 games or something like that, and that really obviously then filled me with confidence. And I think I was unlucky the following year, well, the season before last, because I started injured. I pulled my calf in pre-season, so I couldn't carry on that run. And I think if I had the chance to carry on from what I did the season before, I could have scored a lot more goals that following year as well.
When you look at your goal scoring form at Peterborough as well, you mentioned the Harry Kane reference there. Was a lot said about Jack Marriott as well at the start of last season, because you started off scoring goals better than actually he did, didn't you?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, everyone was saying, obviously, when I first signed for Peterborough, he was my he is my roommate, Jack, albeit for 4 or 5 weeks or whatever it was. So people were comparing me to him when I started the season on fire, and because obviously Peter was all about goal scorers. That's what they try and get a goal scorer in every year, and that's the way the club works. If you're doing well, the club won't hold you back. And I looked at that as well, and I love it at Peterborough, but I also thought if I can have a good season here, I could kick on again and try and go to that next level. And when the season started so well, I thought, right, we can carry this on here. We could be going up one more, but it wasn't to be, and it's all about next year now.
Peterborough club with a great record of taking players from the lower leagues and helping them develop, as you say. Was that a big factor when you looked at how they've helped so many players in your kind of position over the years?
Yeah, exactly that. I think Dwight Gale was the best example for them. I think they brought him from Bishop Stortford or Dagenham or somewhere, and he was there not even 6 months, and they sold him for whatever they sold him for, and now he's probably the most feared striker in the Championship. And it's crazy what they do, but it's just credit to Barry and the owner, and that's what they've done the whole time they've been in charge of the club. And if it works, then why change it?
What are the major differences when you make a step up in leagues on and off the pitch?
I'd say League Two, someone could score a lot of goals, like Norwood this year. You can score a lot of goals in League Two because it's a lot of attack v defence. That's how I feel. It's a bit, the ball is carnage. That's why everyone beats everyone in that division. But then you make the step up to League One, you've got teams coming down from the Championship, Barnsley's, Sunderland's, and it comes to like the more tactical side of the game. And them clubs, when we played against them this year, I think Barnsley scored 8 goals against us in 2 games, and we was flying at the time when they come to our place, and they'd done us 4-0 at home, and you think that they're a proper side. Just the way that they were drilled, that they come to us and knew exactly what they were doing tactically. They were brilliant and ahead of us, and that's why they're going up to the Championship and we're not at the end of the day. So
how much information do the management give you at League One level about, right, this is who we're up against at the weekend, this is the particular players that you might come up against, and do you do your own research as well?
Yeah, that gets given to you by the analyst. The analyst will give you stuff on the opposition that you're playing against, and that's up to you to go onto the website and have a look and see if you're not that sort of. Some people don't like knowing who they're playing against. I'll have a little look, but I'm not really one for looking against the defenders that I'm playing against, because I go out there and I just try and play my own game and just be the nuisance that I am. And but like for some defenders, I think defenders more than anyone, they'd like to see what strikers they're coming up against, and because there's so many different strikers out there, all centre halves are 6'4". Well, strikers, you've got me who's 5'10" and someone else is 6'5". So, but yeah, no, it is. They do go into a lot of detail.
Steve Evans was the manager when you joined Peterborough. Obviously, he's just joined Gillingham as manager. What was he like?
A very interesting character. Obviously, he brought me into Peterborough, so but I've got to thank Steve for taking me to Peterborough. And when it started, obviously I started so well, so I was loving it. But then for whatever reason, it didn't work out for a while. And obviously everyone asked me about the criticism that I took after the Wickham game, I think it was, which I didn't agree with, but that's a manager at the end of the day. If the manager feels that he wants to come out and criticise his players, that's up to the manager, and he did that, and I took that on the chin. And yeah, I think you look back on it now, and I'm a mentally strong person as it is, but I think it makes you more, out of anything under my time with Steve, I've probably come out of it mentally stronger than I thought I would. But yeah, it's one of those things. You work under different managers in your career, and I come across Steve, and yeah, now he's at Gillingham.
Obviously, there's been the change of management at Peterborough. You've got a couple of years left on your contract. Is it nice to look forward to sort of that new chapter continuing as from next season?
Yeah, well, I've got a great relationship with the new manager now. We understand each other. I know how he works. He knows how I work, and It is a big change since Steve left and the new gaffer's come in, and training's a lot different. It's very thorough. He goes into so much detail, and I think we will have a very, very good season next year with what the owners and the gaffer are trying to do with players they're bringing in. And it's one that I think that the whole of Peterborough and the boys are looking forward to.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
Where did you start playing football? Have you always had a ball at your feet as a kid?
Yeah, as a kid I was 4 years old playing for my local side, Faversham Strike Force. I think that's still going now, actually. And are quite big. There was probably only two age groups when I joined. But now you're looking at, I think they've even got men's teams now in the Kent League. It's crazy, but that's football and how it's building. But yeah, then I went from Faversham, and I always wanted to play in the Kent League as a kid, and they were only in like the local leagues, playing like the local towns and villages, and I wanted to play in the Kent League, which was the best league for youth football at the time. And I went and joined Kennington down in Ashford, which my dad obviously had to drive that up and down the Ashford Road every Friday and Sunday for me. Yeah, and I went there, I think I was probably there 6 years or so, until Billy Bone snapped me up for First Touch. And when you showed me that picture when I arrived, I couldn't believe it. That was the best thing I ever done. He's probably the best coach that still to this day that I've ever had. I'm grateful that Bill came to watch one of the games at Kennington that I was playing and said, do I want to come down for one of his sessions? And again, at the time, he only had us boys. There was probably 15, 16 of us that he was coaching on Saturday morning, taking us away in our school holidays to play against Newcastle, Sunderland, all the big boys, Scunthorpe. And yeah, without what I had with Billy, I probably wouldn't be where I am now.
That was real key, wasn't it, in terms of you getting that move, and Scunthorpe were the club that came in for you. How did all that come about?
So basically, Billy used to take us, he used to go and watch hundreds, thousands of Kent games all over the Kent League, and boys that he thought had a chance, he gave them an opportunity, really. He approached your parents and said, look, I'm doing this on a Saturday morning, 2 hours worth of coaching, and then in your half terms I'll take the boys away on a tour. And as much as it cost your mum and dad money, it was about putting their son and daughter in the shop window and trying to give them the opportunity to make a career out of something that every young boy wants to do. And so yeah, we used to go away, we played Newcastle, Sunderland, Leicester, all these massive clubs, and it was about putting us in the shop window. And we played Scunthorpe twice. I think I scored two each game. And Tony Dawes, the youth team manager at the time, went up to Billy and said, we want to sign him. And Billy sat me down and with my dad and said, look, there was a few clubs at the time that wanted to take me. And we looked at it, and Scunthorpe had at the time, I think, six youth graduates in the first team. And Bill said, I think that's the right move for you. And I went and signed my YT up there.
How did you find it moving a long way away from home and finding your feet at a pro club?
I didn't find it too bad. I think probably my family found it a little bit harder, especially my stepmum and my mum at the time. They obviously moving 200 odd miles away from home at the age of 15. I didn't have a summer holiday after my GCSEs. I was straight up there, and that's a sacrifice you make as a footballer. It's every one of my mates was enjoying life for the next 10 weeks and the summer holidays after the GCSEs, and I was making my way up there at A1 to Scunthorpe to start pre-season.
Was it always something that you'd, you know, dreamed about, you know, making this a job, a career, or was it just when you went to First Touch and you started to think more seriously about it?
I think if you ask anyone in my family, I think they'd all tell you that ever since I could kick a ball, that's what I wanted to do. I've always wanted to be a footballer, and I think if if you ask people at school, if you ask people in clubs where I was at, they wouldn't say that I was the one that stood out. There was probably boys with a lot more ability than what I had at the time, but I had that in my head, and that's what I wanted to be. And if I get something in my head that I want to do, I'll make sure I do it to the best of my ability, and through hard work and whatever it was, I've got where I wanted to be.
You're speaking to one of your coaches at Peterborough last week, actually, and he said you're off and you'll be the first one out on the training pitch or the last one to come back in, you know, practising your finishing. And where does that sort of ethic of hard work come from? What is it that motivates you?
Motivates me now, or motivated me back then, was I didn't want to let myself or your family down, because obviously the amount of money that they piled in to fuel the Billy's coaching and up and down the motorways, playing for the county sides, going off to different counties all over the country. And so, yeah, you don't want to let them down, really. But then probably now my motivation would be my mum, because obviously what she's going through. And so, yeah, you just don't want to let... You don't want to let your family down, really.
You're a big family person, aren't you?
Very, yeah.
You know, close family, they've supported you. How much have they helped you to get where you are now?
Well, like I said there, my daddy's up and down the motorway. And when I moved from Kennington, I went to Deal Town, which is another, not a local side. That's 40 minutes for a home game. So a home game for us was an away game, really. But yeah, no. And then obviously First Touch, it meant that just because I was going away with Billy's, it meant that you obviously had to have your family come with you. Well, not your family. My dad had to come with me on the tours. And as much as he loved it, because the blokes and that would go for a night out whilst the boys are in bed. But yeah, the memories that we've got there are probably memories that will live with my dad and myself for probably the rest of our lives, really.
I remember talking to you, I think, when you first came to Ebbsfleet Online, and one of the pros was that you could take your washing home for your mum to do.
Yeah, well, that's it. You get that given to you now. Like at pro clubs, everyone has the kit woman, kit lady. But yeah, when I come down to Ebbsfleet on loan first, that was, I remember going into the manager at Scunthorpe at the time, and he said that, look, I'm willing to let you go on loan. And as soon as he said that, I got on the phone to my agent, and my agent said, look, so-and-so in the Conference North wants to take you, so-and-so in the Conference wants to take you, but they're based up north. And I said, can you drop so-and-so a call at Ebbsfleet? I didn't know anyone there at the time. And he did, and I remember I had to go on trial for 2 weeks down at Ebbsfleet. And luckily the manager at Scunthorpe let me, and obviously Daisy was the manager then, and I remember taking part in training sessions for 2 weeks, and I wasn't sure if I was coming on loan or doing what. And in the end, Scunthorpe got the ump a little bit, and because they wanted me out on loan to get me games, but at the same time I was out on basically trial to see if I could go on loan. And then I got a phone call from Daisy saying, look, we are willing to do it. So I come back down, and I think I scored on my debut. I think Nath scored to bring it back to 2-2. I think it was one of those mental games again against Hyde, and I think I scored the winner and we won 3-2. And I ended up going on another little run with Ebbsfleet, like a deal, and I was there 2 months. And I think, I'm not sure if it was in the same season, I went to Dartford as well. Was it in the same season?
It was the next season.
Was that the next Dartford season? Yeah. I went back to Ebbsfleet, and I'm grateful, obviously, for Daisy for taking me there, because that was my first real taste of proper football. I'd obviously been on loan at teams lower down the pyramid, but to get a crack at Conference football and know that I could handle that was a real boost for me as well.
I was going to say, what level of player were you almost, for want of a better phrase, when you went out on loan early? Because you've been to, what, Gainsborough, Ilkeston, places like that before. Was that more, you were still too young at that point, did you think, to know your game really that well?
Yeah, that was more them sort of loans to go. I first went to Brigg Town and teams like that were right down the pyramid, and Scunthorpe come to me. And I think that's what the problem with football nowadays is, boys that are at in youth teams at that sort of level hesitate to going out to teams that low down the pyramid because of their egos and things like that. And I wasn't one to say no to things like that because I knew I was going out there and getting men's football, albeit that I'd get smashed up in the air because I was this scrawny little 17, 18 year old kid. But that makes you man up a little bit. And football's not tappy tappy, nicey nicey anymore. It's you need to go out there and get into the real world as such. And boys like that aren't really like that anymore. They want to go and play all this lovely football and not get smashed. But that's probably made me the player that I am today because I know that I can take all that sort of stuff. And I've probably took them sort of loans into how I play now. So yeah, I think it's important to go out to them lower league sides, especially if you're not getting a run in at the sides where you're at.
Can you still remember the first time you got smashed from behind by a centre half?
Yeah, I can remember it fondly. Yeah, I remember playing for Brigg Town and we was away at a Scouse side, and I remember coming off. I only come on for 20 minutes, half an hour, and I had some what seemed a 40 year old guy marking me at the back, and I thought, this ain't nice, this isn't. I used to go home and everyone would be like, oh, what's it like? And I'm like, it's not nice. But used to come off with all sorts of little knocks and niggles and scars. And yes, but it makes you the player you are.
Of all the loan spells that you had, those couple at Ebbsfleet came on trial and Daishi then took a chance on you and you got a bit of a taste of it. With hindsight, how crucial was that in terms of what it led to in the future?
Massive, I think, because then clubs took note really, and I think I went to three conference sides, Ebbsfleet, Dartford and Tamworth, and teams were starting to notice that I could score goals in the conference. And obviously you score goals in Conference North, Conference South, but to score goals in the conference, teams then start thinking, well, if he's available to come to us on the cheap as such from Scunthorpe, then why not? Well, let's take a chance on him. But yeah, I think it was massive that I come down here to down south when I was up at Scunthorpe for a very long time, and I think I was up there 7 years in total. And that's, looking back at it, it's probably too long. I was probably there too long now because obviously I'm 28 in July, and I should have probably done it two seasons before. But no, I've done it the way that I've done it, and I'm grateful for them loans. And it took a while really to get to Dartford as well. I think I didn't have to do the same sort of thing like a trial, but it was one of those. My agent didn't know Tony. He didn't know anyone at Dartford. My agent actually rung reception, and when I wanted to come down this way, and Ebbsfleet had been relegated, I think. Dartford were in the conference, and my agent rang reception and said, can I speak to Tony Berman? And the receptionist was like, who is it? And he said, it's Kev Sharp. I've got a player that he might be with. And luckily Tony rang him back, and then obviously the rest is history. I had to go in for a little interview with Tony in the morning. I had a little interview. I signed at probably 11 o'clock, and he said, right, here's your kit, turn up at 6 o'clock, we got a game tonight. And I ended up starting that game and scoring, actually. And again, that was another weird one. But the rest is history. I think I was there probably 3 months, and that was an unbelievable experience. Lads there were one of the best change rooms at the time that I'd been in. And they had lost a few the year before when they had a really good year. But Els, Hazy, Nobes, all them boys are one hell of a group. And it's no wonder that Dartford did so well when all them boys were there.
Yeah, as you say, it wasn't a long spell at Dartford, but some memorable moments, particularly Hyde and the hat-trick.
Yeah, that was carnage, you could say that. To score, I think I scored two in the first half, and I knew that I was on a hat-trick. And as a striker, when you're on a hat-trick, you know you're chasing a hat-trick. And then, obviously, Hyde come back into it. I put us 2-0 up, and Hyde went 3-2 up, I think.
And from memory, they were right at the bottom of the league, yeah. So it was viewed probably by most people as a bit of a gimme that you were going to win this game, and then suddenly you found yourself 3-2 behind.
3-2 behind, and then Georgie Munger scored an absolute worldie from about 40 yards, and luckily, 90-odd minute or whatever it was, a volley fell to me, and I managed to volley it in. And then there's a everyone would, as players, everyone would tell you, if you score a last minute winner, let alone your hat trick, it's, you don't really know what you're doing. The top come off, the boys all come screaming over. Yeah, it was mad. You can't really remember what you do in your celebrations. It just happens. And I'm not one usually for taking the top off, but top come off, and then. But I think the funniest thing was that I had a fan waiting outside after the game, come up to me and went, "I've just won $5,000 off you." And I went, "Right." He said, "Yeah, I put quite a bit of money on you to score a hat trick, and you've done it in the last minute." And I was like, "Wow."
After a lot of waiting around at Scunthorpe and being on the bench or in the reserves, to have moments like that must have been great.
Yeah, it was massive. And yeah, times like that when you're scoring goals, I'm not sure, but I think Scunthorpe might have been struggling at the time, down at the bottom of League One, and obviously they see me scoring goals and they're struggling to score goals. And it was after that spell at Dartford, I think, I went back and I played the remaining 8 games, I think, at Scunny under Brian Laws. And if I hadn't gone out on loan and scored goals and played a lot of games, I wouldn't have got that opportunity again to play for Scunthorpe. And I think that's why I was probably the biggest pest a manager ever had as a young lad, because I'd pull him after every training session trying to go out on loan. And that's, again, that comes down to young lads nowadays. They're probably happy just to get their weekends off when they're not playing involved in the first team. And if the boys are away, they get a weekend off, and it's all nicey-nicey. But I didn't see it like that. I wanted to be playing games of football. So I would be in the manager's ear every day after training, "Can I go out on loan?" He'd say, "Oh, ask me next week, let's see next week." And I would remember that, and I'd go and ask him exactly the same time the following week, "Can I go on loan? I want to go and play football."
Was it quite demoralising not being that close to the first team at Scunthorpe at times?
At times, yeah, but I was injured. I was really unlucky with injuries, really, the timings of them at Scunthorpe. But I can't say that I should have been near the first team when I first come through, because when I went there, Billy Sharp had just left. Martin Patterson was there whilst I was a youth team player, who they sold for $1-2 million. They sold Pato the year they got relegated from the Championship, and Gary Hooper come in and was there 2 years and scored 30 goals in League One and 30 goals in the Championship. And I'm still a first year pro, and you think, well, I'm obviously nowhere near him, but for the right reasons. But then when them boys went, and I remember Brian Laws said to me at the end of that season in League One, when I come back from Dartford and I played the last eight games in that off season, he said to me, "Look, you've got a real crack at League Two next year. You're going to be heavily in my plans." Played every pre-season game, was doing really well, and he said, "You're due to start on the opening day of the season." Sure enough, got a knock in training on the Thursday, and I managed to train the Friday, but gingerly, and that was put me on the bench. And Sam Winnell, I remember, scored on his debut and went on to score 25 goals that year. And I ended up being injured for 6 weeks just after the start of the season, and that knocked me back again. I was down the pecking order, and back on loan I went. I think that was the year I went to Tamworth, I think. But yeah, it's just, that's how football is. But it was nice to be involved right at the end when Russ obviously took the boys on a 30 game win run or something like that, unbeaten run. And I was involved in that, and involved in all the celebrations and all that. So that was a real confidence boost for me. And that was at the end of that year when we had the chat, and I said, "Look," they said, "We want to offer you a new contract." And I was still under 24 at the time, so this Bosman rule was kicking in. And I knew that Ebbsfleet wanted to take me. So did Dover. And I spoke to Russ and said, "I want to play football." He said, "Well, I want you around the place. So I love you. I love you as a player. I love your attitude and all that." And I'll never forget, I was at home and he rung me and he said, "Matty, I've had a good chat with the chairman. We are going to let you go, but we want a 50% selling on you if you go." And I went and signed for Ebbsfleet literally probably a day or two later, and probably worked out the best thing. Peter Varney still digs me nowadays that I went on a free and they couldn't get the 50%, but it's just one of those things.
The sort of your sliding doors moment, really, wasn't it? You know, having been at Scunthorpe in hindsight for a little bit too long to then drop down into non-league. Did that feel like a gamble in any sense to be going down and kind of starting again, as it were?
Yeah, it was a big gamble, but a gamble that I wanted to take because I obviously have faith in my own ability to score goals, and the first year it actually wasn't the greatest for me. I scored 15 goals, but I think I still managed to get... I was still top goal scorer, I don't know, but it was me, Bill and Chaz really fighting for the two spaces, and obviously then Brownie got the sack and Jamie Day come in. And to be fair, I got on with every single one of them managers. It just was one of those seasons for me. And then, obviously, Mac had come in and said, "Look, you Keds, and you're going to be up there." And I was playing. I think we was playing 4-3-3 at the time, and I was stuck out wide left a lot. And I didn't like it, but I did like it at the same time because we were winning every game. And I didn't start the season really well goal scoring wise. I scored the odd goal here and there. Got the strop every game with Mac because he brought me off after 60-70 minutes, but then something clicked. Mac changed the formation a little bit. Me and Keds went up top, and I think I scored 11 on 10 or 11 games in a row. And
did that little switch of position make a big difference?
Yeah and no, because it wasn't just Mac is one of those managers that he looked so much into it as well, and it's still in the Conference South. It was watching games. We had scouts going to games, and we was going in with game plans. And usually, you know what it's like at non-league, you rock up on a Saturday and you play. And I think that's why we did so well under Macca, because he's probably one of the better managers that I've still ever played under. The way he manages their players and gets the best out of players. And I think we was... as much as we threw it away, if we're dead honest with ourselves, we still had an unbelievable season that year. And I think it was the record points that you could. It's like
to
Man City.
Yeah,
it's like Man City and Liverpool this year. I think Sutton done us by 2-3 points that year, but we was 20 points ahead of third or whatever it was. It was something ridiculous, and obviously, and then the playoff final and the heartbreak of losing out on penalties.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. Mm. Did you have a lot of conversations with Macca over the course of the season about why are you taking me off, or I'd prefer to be playing here, or how can we do things better?
Not really, no. I just remember after a game, I had the ump because I kept getting taken off, and I think that was a bit of the naivety coming out of me. But obviously you've got to respect what your manager does, and I had a chat with him, and we still got on so well now, and I'll always get on with Macca, and he's the reason, another reason why I am where I am now, for playing me week in, week out, the way he looked after us and the way he looked after me. And I think he probably deserves a good crack at league football when he gets the opportunity, and he'll be one of the top managers, I think, in years to come.
Do you think he'd go and do the job in the professional game, in the Football League?
Yeah, I think he deserved to. I think if he had the opportunity, I think, yeah, he'd do very, very well. I think it suits him better than non-league football.
The latter part of that season, I think particularly, you were on fire, weren't you? Mm. Ended up getting 30 goals. Describe the feeling when you're on a really good run like that.
You feel unstoppable, really. There was a game, a bit of a nothing game, really, against, I think it was Hazen-Yedding or Maidenhead away.
Hazen-Yedding at Maidenhead.
Yeah, at Maidenhead, yeah. And it was a nothing game, really. I scored fairly on after 10 minutes. And then I probably had three shots after that, maybe a couple more. And every single one of them went in, and I had a shot. My second goal was from a silly angle that went in off the near post. And at that time, I'm thinking, if I'm not on a good run of form here, there's no way I'm shooting. But you just, as a striker, you get on a run and you feel unstoppable. Any striker will say that. You get on a good run, you feel like every shot you're going to have is going to go in. And it's the best best feeling in the world. And I think I scored a hat-trick or four goals that game. A goal the next game. And then a hat-trick on the last day of the season to take me to 30. And then just the penalties in the semi-final and the playoff final.
That game against Hazen, it's probably one of the best individual performances I've seen in terms of finishing and what you did that day. Maybe the third or fourth goal, a big crossfield ball, take a shot on from about the 18-yard line. But you wouldn't even have thought of shooting if you didn't have that confidence.
That's what I mean. Yeah, if you don't have that confidence, there's no way I'm taking that on. I've got all the time in the world. I've seen it. I saw it back, actually. Someone tagged me in it not so long ago. And I've got all the time in the world to take a touch and go and try and do the keeper one-on-one. And I'm on the corner of the 18-yard box. It's got pinged over from the left-hand side. And yeah, I just remember just your instincts takes over as a goal scorer, and I just banged it first time. I remember it well. I think that was my fourth goal, but it's the best feeling in the world.
So, to the playoff final, your memories of the game?
They're not good ones. Probably the lowest point in my career. To have the season that I had personally to, and the team had collectively, is. Well, I think it would have just been the cherry on top of the cake if we had got promoted. Ked scored the two pens in normal time, and they scored with 20 seconds left of extra time to take it to pens. And that point there was, is this going to be our day? And then it went to pens, and obviously Bonds missed. And then when Ked stepped up, I've got the most confidence in Ked. I really didn't think that he'd... Like Lee Walsh would save the pen, and he did, and Maidstone went up, and I never forget that all the boys were in, and I just sat on the centre spot, just trying to gather my thoughts of the season, and that I was in absolute bits. I was in tears, but I made myself watch Maidstone lift the trophy. I'd never forget it. Mrs. and Amy was there, and she said to me, why did you watch them lift the trophy and do have all them celebrations? And I sat there and I watched every single last little bit until someone had come outside and got me. And I think that was my inspiration the following year at Stevenage. I wanted what they had, and I thought it was important for me to watch that because they was having the time of their lives and they had took that time away from me. So I made myself sit there on the floor and watch it, and yeah, that spurred me on, I think, probably for the start of next year.
So as you sat on the pitch after that game, had talks already taken place about Stevenage or interest from other clubs? Was that in motion already?
Yeah, I knew that the interest from Stevenage was there. Macca told me that the interest from Stevenage was there, and it was either Macca or my agent rung me. I remember being on the golf course and they rung me about two months before the end of the season, said that obviously there was interest, and Macca said, how do you want to deal with it? Because obviously you're out of contract. And my agent said, how do you want to deal with it? I said, I love the fact that there's interest there, but you need to tell them that I won't speak to anyone until this season's over, because we've got a chance to do something special here. I'm on a good run and I don't want distractions from other clubs. And at the time, Leon Hunter at Stevenage, I think that made Stevenage, I don't know, but that probably made Stevenage want to sign me more for the character that I am, that I didn't want to talk to them because I didn't want that to distract me from doing what I do. Once the season had done, the dust had settled on what was a disappointing day, and then we had meetings about a week later with Macca, and it was just, that was the last chat that I had with Macca, probably face to face, whilst I was at Ebbsfleet. And I just said, look, I want to try and play in the league if I can, and I will probably sign for Stevenage. And I went up to Stevenage that week and signed the next day or whatever it was.
Was it kind of a perfect move in terms of it being a good stepping stone?
It was, yeah, it was the perfect move for me. I think Peterborough were interested that year as well, but nothing was ever going to happen. Aaron McLean had a big say in the Peterborough situation. He was telling them to take me, to take the gamble, and I don't know if they wasn't sure or whatever, but Macca was pushing and pushing and pushing. They were like, take a chance on him, take a chance. But they didn't, and I went and signed for Stevenage. And yeah, it's probably the best move for me. It was the perfect club. And to be fair, we was unlucky to miss out on the playoffs on the final day that year, and we could have really had something special, because I think if we had gone into the playoffs that year, we'd have probably won it with the momentum and the run that we went on. Again, we went on one of those crazy runs with winning every game in like 11 or something. We was unstoppable, and that boosted us right up there, and it was only a few draws at the end of the season that killed our chances.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
It's not every week that we have a League One striker in on the podcast, so if we could get a little bit sort of technical, I'd sort of find out a bit more about your game and what it takes to be a good striker at that sort of level. During the game, you know, what goes through your head in terms of making sure that you're in the right place at the right time to be able to score a goal?
I don't really know. I find it more instinct more than anything. It's something that I've always done. Not a lot of my goals would come from outside the box. I just try and... A lot of my game's built on my movement and just trying to be clever and get myself... Just trying to anticipate where the ball's going to go. And a lot of my goals are scored inside the six-yard box, let alone the 18-yard box. And I think that's down to just being an absolute pest. And I don't stop moving, I think... That's what I like to hear. A lot of defenders come up to me and just say, I hate playing against you because you don't stop moving. Like, even the boys in training and that, just like, God, just stand still. And I love it when they say that to me, because it's just how I score all my goals. And I'm trying to anticipate the ball before it's even been played. And I think that's where a lot of my goals do come from.
About the art of making those runs, because it's fine margins, isn't it, being onside, offside, making the run at just the right moment when the ball's played?
Yeah, I think movement and runs are something that you can't really teach. It's something that I've had. You're either a good runner off the ball or you're not a good runner, and a lot of my game, as you know, is based on energy and just trying to be an absolute pest. And it's like when I scored a lot of goals from Ipswich from just... ball would get cleared from the defence, and where the defence is static and I'm already on the move, you're already on the move, so you're 5 yards ahead of them anyway. A lot of my goals just come from that, just trying to be on the move before the defender's on the move. And
to what extent do you think you're just a natural finisher, and how much do you have to work at that?
Everyone says that to me. Everyone says you're a natural finisher, and I don't really know what that means. Everyone says, oh, you're a natural finisher. It's something that I've always had, and when people say that to me, I don't know why I'm a natural finisher, but everyone says, oh, you're just a natural finisher, but I don't know how.
Is it something you drill on the training field, you know, taking shot after shot and just getting it into your head?
Yeah, I'm one of those. If I've had a good training session, I know that I've had a good training session, and I'll have a couple of shots at the end of the training. But if I've had a bad training session and I've missed a few chances, I won't leave that training pitch. I'll make it like Macca now. Aaron McLean's at Peterborough, and I'll probably wind him up more than anything, because after training, if I've had a bad training session, I'm not going. I'll have 10 balls on my left, 10 balls on my right, and if they're not perfect, I'm staying out there for hours, because I have to. Obviously, seeing the ball hit the back of the net gives you confidence, and if you're not doing that, then you're going into games not confident. And so if I had a bad training session, I'd be out there and I'd just keep hitting the back of the net. And if that took me an hour, it took me an hour. It could happen first time, it happens first time I walk in. But I'm not prepared to leave the training pitch without knowing that I've got something out of the day.
And you've always, as you said earlier, you've always scored goals in clusters. Why do you think that is?
I don't really know. Again, it's just one of those things that happens. I've done it throughout my whole career has been based on that. Whatever club I've been at, it's just a shame, really, that when I was obviously at Peterborough this year, they come in clusters at the start of the year, and then they were really spread out. And that's not like me. Usually, I scored two against Wickham this year when I first got put back in the side. I'm thinking, right, here we go. And I remember first 5-10 minutes at Bradford away, the next game, I scored a header that was disallowed for offside, but it was actually onside. And I thought at the time, if that goes in, then I am on one of these runs again. I'm not stopping. And that was disallowed for offside, and then I didn't score again for another 4 games. And it was disappointing, really.
You've made it to League One so far as part of your plan since leaving Scunthorpe. How far do you think football can take you?
it all depends really on what opportunities I'm given at Peterborough or wherever I am in the next few years. If I'm playing week in, week out and scoring goals, you never know. If you have a season when you're scoring lots of goals and the team are up there and thereabouts the playoffs or the automatic spots. And the thing with League One, if you're up there and you've got the opportunity, the next step is the Championship, and we all know what the Championship's like. I think someone said to me it's like the fourth or fifth best league in the world, like money wise, everything wise. If you can get up to there, you could set yourself for life. So that would be the aim, yeah. But I've got to score goals and work hard this year and try and get there.
Do you allow yourself to dream? I know you're a very hard worker and it's all about doing the right things, but do you have those moments when you think, you know, if only?
Yeah, a little bit. Tend not to try and think to the future too much, because I think you try and put pressure on you, you're putting pressure on yourself that's not necessary. But then at the same time, I'm realistic and think that I'm 28 now, this has got to happen sooner rather than later. It's been done. People have come onto the scene really late and done it. Vardy done it late, Ian Wright done it really late. And so yeah, you look at them boys and you think, right, there's a chance here still. But that's just down to how hard you want it and really working hard.
How do you keep a level head when the speculation's going? Because you had to talk about it at the end of the season with Ebbsfleet. Presumably it happened when you was at Stevenage as well.
Mm.
How do you do that, sort of have that going on in the background on one side, but do you just not pay any attention to what people tell you?
Not really, no. Obviously your agent will ring you and tell you there's interest from so-and-so, there's so-and-so. But I think that's down to the person you are. You either let that go to your head and you try and push that move, or you just wait, and until something's concrete, I won't listen to anything. Until you finally get that call from a manager or your agent says, can you go and meet so-and-so, whenever that can be, I won't take anything into it, because interest is interest at the end of the day. There's nothing there. And it was a weird one, the Peterborough thing, when I signed for Peterborough, because I was on the way out to London with Amy going up to wherever he was going, and all of a sudden I've got a text from the Stevenage chairman saying, we've accepted a bid, you're free to speak to Peterborough. And I didn't even know there was interest from Peterborough. It was so weird, and I just rang my agent straight away and said, mate, I've got a message from Stevenage here, the Stevenage chairman saying that they've accepted a bid from me. I ain't got a clue what the bid was, but you're free to speak to them. And I went up there the week later and signed, but it was the most randomest thing that's ever happened. But I'm guessing that's how football works, because I didn't have to deal with obviously the bid situation at Ebbsfleet, because I was a free transfer. But if that's how it works, that's how it works. It was new to me.
It's a strange one, isn't it? And I guess Stephen is where they sold another player that around the same time when you went, was that right? That Ben Wilmot left as well,
yeah.
Went to Watford.
Yeah,
he's gone slightly higher up than you have, slightly better, if you don't mind me saying, because he went out on loan to Udinese, didn't he?
That's it, yeah.
Made his debut against
Juve, so...
Where did it go wrong?
Yeah. But yeah, no, he deserves it, Ben. He's one of those, like what I was saying, people with egos, and he's definitely not one of them young lads. He could go to the very top, because as an 18-year-old, you can just tell straight away with the attitude that he's got, and... He deserved his move to Watford, and we wasn't sure if he was going to go to Watford and sit in the 23s, and the manager there likes him. I think he played against Spurs in the FA Cup and the Carling Cup, and made his Premier League debut not so long after that. So yeah, he deserves everything he gets.
What was it about Stevenage then as a club that managed to do that? Not just for Ben, for yourself as well. Why was it so good there?
The training ground has a massive pull on where you're working every single day, and I don't suppose you've ever had the opportunity to go to the training ground there, but it's unbelievable. It's probably a Championship quality training ground. You go in there, it's a gated entrance, the three or four pitches that are state of the art, and they plow a lot of money and time into the training ground. And as a player, you go there and you go there for your meeting, and you think, wow, what is this? And it's a place where you got to accept going 5-6 days a week, you're going to work there for a year, and if you're enjoying where you're going into work, you're going to enjoy doing what you do, and that's going to bring the best out of you. And that was a massive pull for me.
It's an interesting philosophy, and the way you look at it, it makes total sense as well.
Yeah.
Have you ever had interest from other clubs and been there and thought, oh,
don't fancy this, or this isn't really for me?
Not really. Obviously, you hear about interest. There was a lot of interest after that first season at Stevenage from clubs higher up. But obviously, Stevenage weren't willing to let me go. I think they was asking for best part of £1 million. And they weren't willing to let me go, which is fair enough, because I'm their player. But every club that I've been to first, I've signed. Yeah, I signed for Ebbsfleet, then I signed for Stevenage. Stevenage was the first club that showed interest from Ebbsfleet. I went there and signed straight away, and then Peterborough again last year. So yeah, that's just how it's worked out for me. I've not been to other training grounds.
How proud are you of the amount of goals you've scored now in the Football League?
Yeah, very, considering I come into it so late. But obviously I want to get as many as I can in the next few years and try and make a real name for myself in the Football League.
I'd like to ask you about your mum, if mm-hmm. that's all right.
Yeah.
You mentioned all those years ago she was pretty sad to see you move up north to play for Scunthorpe, and then good to come back and be around the family again. And she's now really unwell, isn't she? And you've recently set up a Just Giving page for the Pilgrims Hospice in Canterbury. It's already raised more than £1,200, which is fantastic. Just put people in the picture about her situation.
Yeah, so basically, what was it now? Best part of two years ago, she was unwell, and we wasn't really sure what was going on. And she's been in out of having, I reckon she's probably had 50 general anaesthetics. It was crazy, and she's gone through a lot. And then we obviously got the news about the cancer, and she had cancer, and so that was a bit of a like a wow. But she's obviously so strong, and she just said, but we can do this. So she had chemo, and what was it, 18 months ago? No, about a year ago the chemo stopped, and then we had some really good news at the time, because as much as obviously you get cast in remission and all that sort of stuff, the doctors said that the cancer had shrunk, but she couldn't be classed in remission because the cancer that she's got, only 20 people ever in the world have had it.
Really?
It's some rare form of renal cancer. So yeah, only 20 people in the world have ever had it. So she got referred then. Then after that, she had to keep going back for 3 month scans. Went back for a 3 month scan. It'd come back bigger, more aggressive. Got referred to the Royal Marsden. They then said that they couldn't do anything. 6 weeks ago now, 5 weeks ago, I got the dreaded call from my stepdad just saying that the cancer had spread to her back, all in her bones. And yeah, she's been given mumps. So yeah, not good time.
The hospice sounds like a really amazing place to give people the best care possible.
Yeah, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. That's why I set up the page. I've auctioned off a few shirts, all for that place. I can't explain to you. I keep saying to my mum when I go down, I'll try and go down and see her every day if I can, and it's like a spa. That's the only way I can explain to her. She gets everything. But hopefully she's not in there much longer, and she's going to try and come home within the next couple of weeks would be good. But I got a phone call the other day saying that she's got cellulitis or something like that, so it's just another thing that she's had. I think she's going for the most problems that you can ever have, a ward, because it's just ridiculous. But bless her, she's probably the strongest woman that that I've ever met, because what she's gone through is just ridiculous. But
tell us about her. Not all the conditions and the illnesses, because that can almost end up defining someone because you talk about it so much. But the person that's your mum.
That's hard, really, without blooming breaking down and crying. But she's, she's got me and my two sisters and my stepdad Gary, and she's a strong old girl, she is, but I'll just have to leave that there.
It's good to know that she's been taken care of, and actually this is something practical you can do to help raise money to help other people.
Yeah, that's exactly why I'm doing it, and obviously now football's got an added thing of what I'm going to try and play for. Obviously, everything that I do now was for her and Dad and what they'd done for me when I was growing up, but now I've got to try and make her as proud as I can while she's around. So,
Well, we can definitely share a link to that page.
Yeah.
As many people, I think it's raising awareness as much as anything else about those really rare conditions and the care that is out there, and these places, these hospices need financial support, don't they, to keep it all going?
The hospices, I think one of the nurses told me that it costs about £1 million a month to run. And it's all done on charity work. It's crazy. I think they get 45,000 every month from people just with like the shaking pots and the just giving pages. Yeah, they get about £80,000 a year, and then costs them £1 million a month to run. And you get next to nothing from the government, so it just shows the work that people do. And I didn't realise that a lot of people that work there are volunteers, and it's crazy. But
before the tears flow readily, we'll move on to the quickfire questions, shall we? Just to wrap ourselves up, the best goal you've ever scored in your career, Matt?
Probably Bromley away. Absolute first year. I actually saw Alan Julian last week at Ronnie Henry's testimonial, and he said, "You've not scored a better goal than that, have you?" I said, "No." It was about, I don't know what it was, 40 yards out on the volley. This is the top corner, so yeah, I'll probably say that one.
I'm hoping the answer's not going to be Hyde, but what's the favourite team that you've always scored against? You know, who did you always love playing against?
Yeah, Hyde's a team I think I've scored a good few goals against. In the league, I'd say I've scored... This is a weird one. Every time I've played against Portsmouth, I've scored against Portsmouth. It's a strange one. I've played them three times, scored three goals. It's just one of those sides.
What's the best ground you've played at now?
Stadium of Light or Ellen Road, probably.
Strike partners, who have you most enjoyed playing up there alongside?
Keds. That's no question about it, Keds. I was disappointed, actually, when I listened to his podcast, because he come in and said that... I think he said something about I only scored 20 goals or something. He set up 17 of my 20 goals, and I messaged him.
He took a lot of credit, let's be fair.
I messaged him saying it wasn't 17 and 20, it must have been 25 and 30, because I definitely got 30 goals. But yeah, no, he assisted a lot of them.
Just because he did so much hard work alongside you?
Everyone sees him for the size and the presence that he is. But you won't see a player get round a football pitch as quite as much and as well that he does, and what he brings to the side. It's just not just what he brings in his presence, but his work rate as well. You don't see that. They're a rare breed as well.
Was he right that he did set out that many of them?
If I scored 30, I'd reckon it's probably around the 20 mark that he set up.
Oh, I think his words were, "I got Matty a move." So
he's not wrong.
What music do you listen to before a game, or how do you get yourself up for a match?
I'm not really a music. I don't really listen to music. I just try and take the moment in. Really, I'm not one to close off and listen to music. I'd rather take the moment in. And some people come in with these the big headphones and all that. That's not me. I just try and chill out and get in the zone that way.
Who's the best crosser of a ball that you've played with in terms of putting it on just the right spot for you?
And Marcus Madison, that's at Peterborough now. He's got probably by far the best left foot in our league, and one of the best left foots probably in the Football League. You've never seen anything like it. It's ridiculous, and it's credit to him for having whatever amount of assists he gets a year. He probably averages about 15 to 20 assists a year. It's crazy. Him, definitely.
And what about the hardest goalkeeper to score past? And this could be someone that you've played against or someone that you've faced in training and denied you many, many times.
I never scored against Maidstone, so Wargs would be up there probably.
What about the most difficult centre-half that you come up against? Is there one where you just think, I'm not going to get much out of him today?
Yeah, there's a few of them. Especially in League One now, there's some very good centre halves. Ryan Taffazzoli in training, he's just left Peterborough now, but he's right up there. It's the boys that are 6'5", but can move at the same time. It's that they're rare, but obviously the higher up your leagues, they get more like that. There's both of the Barnsley centre halves. I didn't enjoy playing against them. It's the ones that can move their feet and are 6'5", so they've got a bit of everything there. They're not nice to play against.
That's the challenge, I guess, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. I'll just have to move more and try and lose them that way.
OK, Matt, time beats us as always. Been fascinating talking to you for the last hour. We wish you well. I'm obviously into close season now, so you've got a few weeks off before you have to get back for pre-season training, which I'm sure you're looking forward to almost as much as everything else. Wish you well with your fundraising at the Pilgrims Hospice. Hope it all goes well in that respect. And I say thanks very much for your time. We wish you well next season at Peterborough.
Lovely, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.